Full Linux Link Tech Show. Full Linux Link Tech Show.
Hey everybody, good evening, February 25th edition of the Linux Link Tech Show. Sorry for the bit of a delay, the 15 minute delay, holy mackerel. We have a little bit of a new getup going here and we made some boneheaded mistakes, particularly on my part again, so I apologize for that. But as we roll off here, we'd like to see some more people on the chat if possible. So if you're out there listening, jump on the chat, thelinuxlink.net, and join Tech Show. In the meantime, while people are connecting,
Tech Show,
we're going to roll over to
everybody
our promo.
Everybody, rip out your pretzels.
Our promo, and then we'll be right back.
Hi, folks. This is Link from the Linux Link Tech Show. Have you ever thought to yourself, I have a question for these guys? Or, I wonder if they would review my product. Or, why don't they talk about this? Or, maybe, I sure would like to support these fellas somehow. Or, just, how do I get in touch with them? Well, the easy answer is to email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. You can let us know any questions, suggestions, or information you might have. And, perhaps even get mentioned on the show. Email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net and let us know how we're doing and whether or not you enjoy the show. And also catch us on IRC every Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern by pointing your favorite IRC client to our server, thelinuxlink.net, and joining channel pound tech show. Hope to see you there.
Hey, hey, Dan cutting in here. Do you have any questions, comments, complaints? Don't like what Alan said last time? Feel free to email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. Do you live in or around Bethlehem, Pennsylvania? Plan on being in the area some Wednesday night? If so, and you would like to join us in the studio, we would love to have you. Again, email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. Linux is a community project. Being a community project, it tends to foster regular gatherings of Linux enthusiasts who collectively call themselves Linux users groups. Chances are, there is a Linux users group in your area. We here at the Tech Show belong to the Lehigh Valley Linux users group, so if you hail from the area, come join us. Membership is free and fraught with fun. If you're new to Linux, then consider checking out our sister organization, the Linux Special Interest Group, run by LVLUG member Jeff Sartler. The Linux SIG caters to newbies and runs hands-on labs. If you are south of us, be sure to look up the Bucks County Linux Users Group or the Philadelphia Linux Users Group. Those to the east, there's the New Jersey Linux Users Group. More information can be found at thelinuxlink.net, which strives to be the unofficial portal of Linux and Linux happenings in the Lehigh Valley. If you find yourself in one of those rare locations that is not conveniently near any Linux Users Group, get your name and desires out there on the web. Contact the closest lugs, and chances are you will find neighbors who are looking to get together. All you need is a few enthusiastic people and a place to meet, be it a living room, basement, library, or local pub. You will meet new people, learn some stuff, and have boatloads of fun. So remember, support your local users groups. Finally, we here at the Linux Link Tech Show thank you for listening, and hope you enjoy this episode as much as we enjoyed putting it together. Welcome back. That was our promo. Now we're out of time for tonight. We thank you for listening. My name's Dan Washko. We're glad that you're here joining us on the Linux Link Tech Show. across from me is the infamous Lincoln Fezzadin.
Hey.
And behind him, keeping diligent watch on the stream, is Alan Metzler, Blogmaster.
Hello, all.
That's not what we were calling him earlier.
No, actually, that was not what we were calling him earlier.
Another action-packed show coming at you. Alan posted to his blog 3 times, I think, in the past week.
It's a record.
Yeah, Alan posted 3 times. The dog puked on the floor before the show.
The dog did more than puke, man. It was like humongous there.
The dog coughed up its stomach on the floor and the lower intestine to go with it.
It's been an interesting show start, that's for sure.
Yeah, we're 15 minutes late, which means we can go a half an hour longer.
Oh, at least.
Yeah.
Half hour, 45 minutes, you know. Depends on how much content we have, but, you know, judging from past weeks.
And we hopefully next week, hopefully starting next week, we will be able to have live phone sessions.
Hopefully, yes.
Hopefully.
We can never get the connections running right.
Hopefully.
Now, the Linux show is just adding that, and they've been on air for how long?
Well, no, they're actually, the Linux show was running the whole thing off of a phone connection.
Well, that's true, that's right, but
they're all in different places.
They're adding dial-in, though, for listeners.
Right. We just need dial-in.
We ain't adding that for a while.
We need dial-in just to make sure we can all actually get on the show at the same time, that's all.
Yeah, we'll have dial-in for listeners, but I don't know about dial-in for all of us. Well, that would be neat. That would be interesting.
Someday when we...
Unless you have, like, conference call on your phone, though, Dan. I don't think we'd all be able to... I don't think Link and I would both be able to dial in at the same time.
Unless someone holds a cell phone up.
Yeah.
Hold a cell phone to the mic, yeah.
Everybody just hold their cell phone, though.
All right, so I guess I'll start off with some news this week. A little discussion that we can have. Not about what happened today, but... I was reading on Slashdot and NewsForge and some of the other sites about the upcoming service pack release for Microsoft, Windows XP, that's going to incorporate antivirus software.
Really?
Yes. And now, of course, there's two veins of discussion going on, Slashdot. One side who sees this as another antitrust issue, Microsoft stepping in, and using their leverage as a monopoly to interfere with the sale of the other antivirus vendors. Now, you know, Microsoft packaging that with their software has now put McAfee, Norton, and everybody else on the fence, and has possibly taken away some of their financial revenue, or will, when they release the service pack with their incorporated antivirus scan. And, the opposite side says it's a very important thing. It should have been incorporated into the operating system a long time ago.
Well, they shouldn't need an antivirus program to begin with. What they should have is secure code.
Well, yeah. There's that side of it. There's that side of the argument, too,
but
where
in fact,
instead of...
They're just trying to make one program do everything.
Right.
The computer. Yeah, and that's where one program opens up and suddenly you've wiped out half your system because, you know, some little script kiddie got in there first.
Yeah, sure. It's an interesting thing. They code with these security holes in, so then they have to include a service pack instead of fixing the security hole with antivirus software to watch this hole and avoid something coming in to exploit the hole. So don't patch
exactly
the hole.
That's exactly how I describe my day, to watching this hole when I'm out there fixing the Microsoft stuff.
Yes, there's a hole. Instead of covering it, we'll put a person on one side of it to prevent things from going in it.
Sure.
But they can only watch
one
that side of the hole.
One side of the hole, yeah.
And maybe they can run around fast enough to stop something coming in from the other side.
Holy sure.
I'll tell you. I don't know. And the people who think that, hey, this is a great idea, and honestly, there is a severe problem.
Oh, we know the phone's still
working. Yeah, the phone's over there working. And it's going to keep ringing.
It's our first caller.
and we can't get him on the air.
Damn it. Just yank the phone cord out of there. That's going to keep going on. All right, the wife got it. Well, people Most of the users, Microsoft users, don't understand the necessity of keeping their antivirus, installing an antivirus to begin with, and then keeping it up to date. I mean, you go out and buy a computer from Best Buy, Walmart, or whatever. Typically, if it's a Microsoft computer, some antivirus vendor has thrown a trial version on it.
Like that.
Yeah, and most people don't keep it up to date. So then,
because once the 90-day free trial runs out, my parents are like this. You know, the 90-day free trial ran out 3 years ago, and if I don't go down there once a month and make sure that something's updated on there, you know, or whenever I get down there, they won't do anything at all with it.
That's true. And so now we have all these problems, all this traffic on the internet due to these worms. It annoys people like us who don't run these operating systems that have to clean up after them, that have to suffer with inboxes and mail servers clogging up with these worms, or the mails coming from infected machines. Now,
exactly what mail servers are these that get infected and clogged up like that?
Well, these are Exchange servers.
Exactly.
Well,
Microsoft Exchange servers, because they don't filter their damn email. That's why.
But you still get this stuff coming through to everybody. It stinks.
Yes.
All right. So now Microsoft decides to take the initiative and slap on an antivirus software instead of fixing the patch. Now, I think, you know, it has some merit, but on the same token, with the flip of a switch, they now put a whole entire industry, who has profited on this problem, in jeopardy.
Profited majorly on this problem.
Now, we can argue back and forth about the benefit of including antivirus into the operating system and not including it, but I guess the point of the greater picture here, I think, is the capability that Microsoft has to destroy a whole industry at their whim. What the possibility.
The possibility.
Right, but, you know, there's got to be somebody out there with an actual patent on antivirus software. Do you know what I mean? So someone stands to make some money off of that. And, you know, I fully believe that Microsoft has been kicking back money to some of these virus antivirus people anyway.
Well, you know, they bought RAV Antivirus about 6 months ago.
Right.
So they're probably building off of that technology. They flipped that switch, incorporated it into the patch. Now, all of a sudden, you don't need a Norton. You don't need McAfee's antivirus. They've thrown a firewall in with their software. You don't need Norton or McAfee for their antivirus. Now you got a whole section of an industry that's just belly up because Microsoft decided, hey.
But step back from that for just a second. Like Norton System Works, which is an all-in-one package, includes their antivirus and a bunch of other things. They happen to have a lot of similar products that Microsoft already includes, that like their scan disk kind of thing, Microsoft scan disk. And Norton's got a speed disk, which, you know, happens to work better than Microsoft scan disk as far as I'm concerned. But and there's a lot of little things like that, a lot of extras that they put in there, and I think they probably will do all right with their existing market, because, you know, I mean, here's the deal. Microsoft is putting out this antivirus package with Windows. But so far, since I've been alive, like, they haven't been able to put Windows out without a major security flaw in it. So, if this antivirus package is produced by Microsoft and is included in a Microsoft product, chances are it's one, not going to work, or two, it's going to have some kind of severe holes in it. So what's going to happen is the external vendors and coders are going to, you know, patch that up and put their product out to cover whatever flaws that the Microsoft antivirus has on it. So, you know, it's like a cyclical thing.
Well, I see what you're saying, but on the same token, those people who would go out and buy an antivirus might just say, why do I want to buy a new one?
It's already there.
Huh?
Because it won't work.
They won't buy one because it's already there.
Right.
Yeah, but the one that's there, you see, my train of thought here is that the one that's Microsoft is going to include that they're going to build is not going to work. You know,
that's most likely.
Yeah, something in it will
without another service patch.
Exactly right. Something in it is going to be broken, and in order for these people to once again feel safe after they figure out, I mean, there might be an initial point in time when people say, "Hey, well, this is included with Microsoft, and that's it." But after they figure out that that is broken, and undoubtedly it will be broken, then, of course, they're going to go looking elsewhere, and they're going to start picking right back up on McAfee and Norton's and stuff like that.
I don't know. We look at the history of all the other software that they incorporated in. Look what happened to Netscape. Now, we could say Mozilla is going strong, but Netscape as a company lost out.
Yeah, but a lot of Windows users don't really know Mozilla and stuff. I had a friend of mine I was on the phone with. I set him up with Firefox the other night, and he had no idea that that another browser existed. Now he's semi internet literate, I would say, but he had no idea. He was like, "Oh, this is great!" Suddenly he's got no more pop ups. All the things that he was complaining to me about.
Everything is fixed now.
You've got a cable modem here. Go to this site and download this and install it while we're on the phone. And, 5 minutes later, and, he's can't stop praising the product enough. Problem is, there's a lot of people who don't know about this.
Shazam! That's right. And that's a problem. But then on the same token, I mean, again, Netscape was really popular, but why are people going to use it when the Internet Explorer is already installed?
You download it, and here it is. You've started up your computer, and there's a big, giant E on there. Use the internet here.
We've already seen that people are willing to accept broken technology to a point. Because, again, you're right. They don't know any better.
Yeah.
Right. So now Microsoft says, we got the antivirus built in. They're not going to know any better.
Until they get hacked. The first one that goes through that Microsoft antivirus software, which probably won't take long. The first one that goes in and starts knocking people out, that's going to be a whole different story. Then, the other companies are going to start making money hand over fist because their big claim to fame is that we patched the holes that Microsoft antivirus left in.
Now, let's look at that. What's the biggest problem with antivirus software? It dogs the system.
Sure.
Invariably dogs the system. So now you have Microsoft's built-in antivirus, which will dog the system, as much more than XP already does. And then you're going to have to get another vendor's...
I don't think anything dogs the system more than XP does.
Turning your perfectly new computer into a 486.
And then XP antivirus dogs it. Now you got to buy a second antivirus. It's going to dog it even more.
Sure.
So you're going to have to buy a faster machine to take advantage of these new...
So
you don't get infected.
But you have to buy a faster machine anyway just to keep downloading the service packs from Microsoft because they pack more and more bloat every time you get something. It's pounding 10 pounds of crap in a 2-pound bag, and they just keep going and going and going.
On the laptop here, I have XP on here as well, only because it came with it and stuff. Well, yeah, you can Uber me. The only time I actually fire it up is the software packet, the updates. But it's like the minimum I could get it down to was like 5 gigs.
Mm.
Granted, some of it has to do with the fact that, you don't have an install program anymore. You've got that system restore disk. So you're forced to accept, everything that Sony wanted to put on this thing. It was like 5 gigs for a program, for an operating system.
In all seriousness, no, if you have to run Windows, that is the way to do it, man. To make sure that you have one of those, quick restore disk kind of things, because it takes you like 4 hours to get everything running on your system without one of those.
Oh yeah.
And when you have one, it takes like 20 minutes. So that's the way to be. Not that you can, not that it helps anything with any external programs that you have or any of your data that, of course, no one
that you've wiped out.
Or yeah, right.
You have to wipe it out to install it. But.
Happy days.
Happy
well,
days.
That's one thing that's in the news. Link,
yes.
Do you have anything in the news?
Do I have anything? You know what? I don't think I have any, in the news kind of stuff. I haven't really been paying a whole lot of attention to the news because I've been, like, working on sideline projects and crap all week long. So, no, I guess I don't.
Well, then we'll bypass you and go right to Alan, who updated his blog three times.
Three times
in the past week. Woo-hoo. That's newsworthy.
That's newsworthy enough, yes. No, I just found the latest My Doom outbreak is spreading again, according to this report. This is the My Doom F on it, which supposedly is programmed to go after the RIAA this time.
This is the one that they let loose on SCO, right?
This was first SCO, and then it was
Microsoft, and now it's the RIAA it's supposed to attack.
But this one also, according to this report, it also will delete random Word files and Excel files. So.
Excellent.
Get rid of all your Word files real easy,
Well, you know, one of the interesting things is we're getting hit with the Natchi B virus. Have you heard of that?
No.
Yeah, that's on here, too.
The Natchi B. Now, our antivirus software is catching it and cleaning the machines. We have to run some service packs, I think, on some extraneous workstations that weren't updated for some reason. But, you know, people are sitting there with their computer on, not doing anything. And the machine gets infected. They're not doing anything. And the warning comes up and says, Sophos caught this in this threat. And I'm thinking to myself, how are they getting infected? How is the virus getting in?
Is it going through, like, Windows Messenger service or something?
I don't know.
Rolling around.
But how is it getting in, and how is it hitting? They're just sitting there. I had everybody get off because I had to reboot the one Novell server. So I had everybody get out of their stuff. I got secretaries are sitting there talking to themselves. And, like, simultaneously, every single workstation in this one room, all of them come up with the warning saying the Natchi virus was caught. They're not doing anything. You don't even have to be doing anything anymore for your machine to get infected.
Shazam!
It threw me for a loop. And I'm sitting here thinking, well, wait a minute, maybe they're not getting infected. Maybe there's one machine and it's sending a broadcast message, but it's not supposed to send a broadcast. It's supposed to send it only to the tech group. Why are all these people getting it? And it just keeps popping up and popping up and popping up.
Wow.
That does not compute.
Well, and people are just like,
as a user, I don't really have to worry too much about that at work. Because that stuff gets taken care of for me, so I don't get to see your fun job.
Well, it's not a fun thing.
You're not missing nothing, man. I'm telling you. No, that's it. Thankfully, like, I have a whole lot of really junky NT machines on the floor that a lot of these people are using, but they're using custom programmed apps on them, and I don't allow them to go get their email or anything like that, so thankfully they're all right. However, our secretary's machine has been, virus afflicted for years now, and I just like kind of turned off Outlook and told her to use the webmail instead because it's, it's a lot more secure. It doesn't, like, execute things randomly, but she's due for another update, too, and she keeps getting viruses every other day, catching them with AVG. Which I think you turned me on to that, didn't you, Dan? AVG?
AVG. Got to give credit to my dad for that one.
Yeah.
And it's free.
Yeah, it's free, and it,
I used that one on my parents' machine. It seems to be working well.
It's better than nothing, and for those of us IT people who cannot get the stupid suit people that we work for to put up some money so that we can have, programs to make the network go. you got to use what you can get, So you use, like, free junky software.
Free wherever possible.
Yeah, free wherever you can get it. Except for Linux, of course. When you start telling them Linux, then they freak out. And, no. We'll, instead of putting OpenOffice on those computers, we'll go ahead and spend the $10,000 it costs to get the new version.
$300 a license or something like that.
The
for
new
Office.
Version of new version of what was it, Office 2003 now? go buy her Office 2003, and the only thing she uses it for is, like, you know.
Yeah, typing a letter. Typing
Who
a
has letter. Office 2003?
Nobody yet.
Oh.
Nobody
I've heard that if you use Office 2003 and open up an older version, it corrupts the older version, so it can't be read in an older version of Office anymore.
Well, you know, it probably doesn't corrupt it. It probably...
updates it.
Yeah, it probably updates it to Office 2003 format, which, of course, is incompatible with Office 2000.
But apparently it does it silently, that even if you open the file, don't save it, it changes it.
Another Microsoft tactic to get everybody to spend, you know, the $400 per computer to upgrade to 2003. Actually, more than that per computer, because, you know, some computers you really have to upgrade the computer in order to...
I was just saying, to run the latest Microsoft stuff. So sure. Most computers, you got to buy a new one to do it.
Absolutely. Well, guys, what do you think? I think it's... We got 2140 over here. I believe that it's time for our musical interlude.
All right. Well, when we come back, got some stuff. Again, more bitching about Microsoft products, talking about PNGs and PNG support Microsoft and why you should consider using PNG over the GIF format. And we'll talk about some CSS and XHTML explorations that we've been doing.
Oh, yeah. Good stuff coming up. Keep an ear out for it. We'll catch you in just a minute. You are listening to Maritime Girl EP.
And we're back. That was Link.
That was Scorpio Rising's Maritime Girl, the extended play version.
Extended play version, yes.
Well, we're back.
We are.
And we said we were going to talk about some web design.
Yeah.
Stuff. And,
well, you're the one that started all this crap anyway, man.
Well.
Because you made this, Dan redid the page for the ever popular thelinuxlink.net, like the original page, the one that's been saying that it was going to be a newsletter kind of thing for the last, 4 years or something.
No, I changed that last year.
And it was 4 years before that.
Four years before that.
It was just that GIMP marble background with Linux Link is said, right. Coming soon for 4 years.
But no, dude, the new page looks really good.
And I appreciate that.
It looks really good. And of course you did all that in CSS style sheets?
Mostly CSS.
Which of course spurned me into going and checking out and getting a little bit more proficient in CSS myself, because I develop not only my personal websites, which are a number of them I maintain, but also some web pages for work. So I had to check that out, and I started changing things, and then Alan
started
changing his stuff, man.
My original home page went from black, because it was the only color I could come up with at the time that worked. So it's all white now, but it's still a good change.
It looks good. It's got those little, like the rounded corner.
Yeah, that's a Mozilla function. Because unfortunately,
does that
if you bring
only
it up,
work in Mozilla?
It works in a Mozilla, any Mozilla-based browser. It doesn't work in an IE. IE will end up getting squares on it, but Dan's laughing about that already. But you use it's a Mozilla Dash Border, I think it is, and you can get those little rounded things.
That is a pretty nifty thing, I would have
Alan,
to say.
Alan, nothing works in Mozilla. I mean, Internet Explorer.
I wasn't worrying. You worry a little bit more about that than I was. I really didn't care whether...
Yeah, it's like, good. I don't care if my page looks like crap in IE.
Hey, I got the little penguin to stay up there in the background. That's all I wanted.
Is that a PNG?
Yeah.
And that's obviously, you have set an alpha level on there, so there's some transparency?
No, it's not the way I want it to be, because I did it really quickly, and all I basically did on that one, if you change the color of the page, it doesn't work really well on it, because unfortunately I'm not really great in GIMP in terms of making things transparent like that, which is what I wanted to do. I wanted it to be more transparent. What I ended up doing was just like turning the contrast up to way too high, so you can still see it, but it's not what I wanted to do. I wanted that transparency look, but I wasn't able to find what I was looking for. I know it's in the GIMP somewhere, but I just wasn't able to find it, and I couldn't find my book on the GIMP to go through and figure out how to do it. So
there's a book on the GIMP?
I
mean, like, other than the manual?
Well, other than the manual.
There's a lot of GIMP stuff out there.
Yeah, I forget what the name was. I picked up this one in Borders, Easy Lessons on GIMP or something like that. Actually, I think Dan has a copy of it floating around here. I've seen in the...
Or the GIMP pod?
It's one of the other ones. I've seen it in one of the piles on the floor here. Well, not the one that the dog puked on, but
easy. Oh,
now let's not badmouth our professional studio.
How dare you? We're supposed to be working together, not against one another.
We're not working against it.
Well, no,
we've become quite happy with the mess.
Sure.
Quite.
Well, one of the things that I've been struggling with ever since I took over the web design pages at work
was your sexuality.
Aside from that, has been the ongoing frustration in developing pages that work with Internet Explorer. Because my primary development is using Windows. No. My primary development is using OS X and Linux, using the GIMP. I use Dreamweaver. Do most of my graphic design in the GIMP. A little bit of Adobe Illustrator. But right from the get-go, I started with PNGs.
Right.
And we'll segue into this little thing for those of you. I'm sure most people understand PNGs. But PNG is one of the things that it was designed for as a replacement for GIF. Now, GIF's popularity right now stems from its overwhelming support in just about every browser. The main problem with GIF is, though, is the patent on the LZW algorithm, which is held by Unisys. Now, the patent ran out in the United States, hasn't been renewed, in June of 2003, but it still exists in Germany, Italy, Canada, France, the United Kingdom, and Japan. Mm-hmm. So, of course, there's that big issue with GIF. Now, Ping, PNG, is a patent-free replacement, and you can also use it for replacing a lot of the commonly used TIFFs, for what TIFFs are commonly used for. So why would you choose Ping
except
over GIF?
Except it's not supported very well in some browsers. That's the problem.
Right. Well, so why would you choose to use PNG over GIF? Well, of course, aside from the patent issues with GIF and the fact that PNG is an open standard, the biggest thing is the alpha channel support, which allows you to control the transparency level of a pixel.
Sure.
Which is great in a Ping. And that transparency adapts to the background, and it's not dependent upon the background, so which I guess, you know, GIF can be in some other image formats. It has a cross-platform control of image brightness with using its gamma correction, a two-dimensional interlacing. It has a lot of those features which extend its capabilities above and beyond the standard GIF format. All right, so now Mozilla has full alpha support and basically full support for PNG since version, and all versions since basically July 19th of 2000. And that's 4 years ago. So PNG has been out for a while. And Netscape is the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, ironically, Internet Explorer on Mac, version 5, is the same full support of PNG that Mozilla has, by and large. It works. Now, Internet Explorer, from version 4, Internet Explorer, Microsoft, is quoted as saying that they have full support for PNG. Unfortunately, since 4... alpha support has been broken. Gamma support is broken. Progressive display of interlaced images is broken. And there really isn't much support for MNG format, which is the PNG equivalent of animated GIFs.
So basically you're telling me that, you know, their graphic support is busted.
For PNG.
For PNG, but not only just that. There's also a host of other problems. Like there's some severe CSS issues.
We'll get to those in just a minute. let me finish up with the PNG problems. Mm-hmm. Now, there are hacks and workarounds to get PNG to work properly, and I'm gonna put this up on our resources section. These articles that I looked over to read this and some of the hacks that you can do. There's also an IE PNG support petition out there that you can sign that somebody submits to Microsoft. They don't give them your email address unless you want them to. But it's just, you know, I think something like 13,000 people have already signed it. But you can get some support by using some workarounds. Now, there's an IE, Internet Explorer code hack. There's one that's based in JavaScript, and there's another one that is a Microsoft proprietary function that you can add to your coding.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a simple little thing that you can add in there.
Not a simple one-liner.
No. It is a one-liner, but it's a very convoluted one-liner and requires, you know, a proprietary Microsoft extension, which then ends up violating...
It violates the W3C standards,
the
right?
W3C standards. So that becomes an annoying pain in the ass. Now, the big frustration for me is in developing the Linux Link page and the pages for work, I do a lot of testing primarily with Mozilla.
Right.
And then I move to the other browsers that I use on a regular basis. And then when I'm happy with the way it looks, I think, okay, now it's time to piss myself off. Let's go open up Internet Explorer.
At least you're looking forward to it.
Oh, so you fire up Internet Explorer.
It's wonderful and everything else, but now let's try it on Explorer.
Yeah. Just talking about PNG format, you get this nice PNG with a big, gaudy gray background because it can't do the alpha transparency, alpha mm-hmm. channels. Now, the one I did with the Linux Link was a clear PNG, had just clear background. And if you went and opened it up, I put that image over top of a gray bar.
Right.
Which is using CSS is a gray bar right there. Looks fine in every browser except Windows, Internet Explorer. Windows on Mozilla on Windows, no problem. Internet Explorer, it turned the background of the image white. And I got this gaudy white background, half on, half off the gray bar, and it looked like crap. That I actually had to go in and change the background color of the PNG to gray.
So it's gray, yeah.
To gray, to match the gray background so it will look right in Windows. Sometimes I can get around with this stuff, with playing with the different compression levels and everything. Like, I used to go in, and the PNGs I created for work, some of them I created in Adobe Illustrator, I'd pull them up in the GIMP and resave them, and it would work fine in Internet Explorer after that. Well, that wasn't happening with the PNG I created straight from the GIMP. For some reason, it just would not work. So eventually I caved in and put a gray background on it to match the gray background. And that just, right then and there, that's one of the pinnacle problems I see with Internet Explorer. And, of course, you were brought up the fact of how it works with cascading style sheets.
Right.
And, again, you know, I look at my sites, everything looks fine. I pull them over onto Internet Explorer, and all
so
of a sudden,
Explorer,
it's
yeah.
like fonts are huge and gaudy and blocky.
Oh, yeah,
that's the other thing I noticed on my page when I bring it up in Internet Explorer. All my fonts are like twice the size of what they are normally.
Right.
I don't know. Part of that maybe because I didn't force fonts in my CSS either.
Does that happen when, like, if you force the fonts to a 5-point font or 8-point font or whatever, does that hold? Will that hold true over to Internet Explorer, or does it still?
I think it's supposed
make
to
make them all wonky.
Well, I can tell you, I don't know if I don't recall me setting specific font sizes like that. I've used M's, and then I've gone to relative, doing normal, large, extra large.
Right.
And I've noticed that even with the EM, which is one EM supposed to be this the font size at the normal level.
Right.
It's still like half a size, almost a half a size larger than it is on Mozilla or anything else. And I pull up Mozilla on the same machine, and it looks right. But under Internet Explorer, it looks horrible.
I just can't. I can't get anything to look. Yeah, the only things I can get to look right under Internet Explorer is like the most, you know, rudimentary, basic, like, we're talking like HTML 3. Whatever, you know, mm-hmm. 3.1 or what, 3.2 or something like that. Old HTML or HTML 2.0, that sort of code, when they first started using basic tables and things like that, that you can pretty much get the render all right. And and once you start getting complicated and you start slapping CSS in there, you know, and GIFs, you know, alpha channel GIFs, which everybody's, you know, always had a problem with that, and PNGs and stuff like that. You just run into horrible, horrible stuff. But me, I have pretty much given up on making any decent-looking sites that actually run on Internet Explorer. And if, you know what I mean? I'm at the point now where I'm really frustrated with it, and if you really want to see what my site looks like and make it look good, then you need to come with some kind of Mozilla-based browser or Opera or something like that. Anything but IE. looks fine. Everybody's like clicking away. What if you guys over? Can you guys over the proverbial encoded airwaves hear that little clicking? Everybody's just going.
Yeah. Well, Paladin said on the chat that using CSS to set up fonts, and good CSS, and XHTML, and validating through the W3C. Best way to do it. And that's what I do.
Yep.
And still, I go and I can look at my pages in Internet Explorer. And it's a frustrating thing.
But I will have to say, though, the only thing that I have not actually tried is using, like, CSS on an IE page for IE and actually specifying every font size. You know, like, use an 18-point font. You know, use a 20-point font over here. Use it, and actually specifying the font size and see if maybe that cleans it up. Because that's like the weirdest thing. You get some normal looking web page, you pull it up on an IE, and the font's like 4 inches tall or something like that. You know? What is that?
Well, see, one of the things that you keep hearing over and over again, and with web development is allowing the user to kind of set the specifications for themselves and instead of using specific font sizes, using the relative versions. And the problem that you run in with doing that, though, is you have issues like this where it looks completely different in Internet Explorer than on every other browser. And it becomes very, very frustrating.
Sure. And the worst part of it is, I think the worst part of it is not when you're doing, like, tables or something like that, the old HTML stuff. When you start doing CSS, then you have to be concerned with that because your element that you create doesn't always encapsulate the entire font. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So you can create some small little, like, box element and have the font be dragging off the end of it, you know, hanging off the edge of the screen or something like that. That doesn't happen in a table, but CSS still has its quirks, I guess.
Well, yeah. I mean, but not in Mozilla.
No, it looks good.
Not in Mozilla.
I've been doing all my web development this past, and I've done... where's my car? No. I've done probably, you know, 10 or 12 or maybe even more than that, 15, 20 web pages just this week. It's like Wednesday now, right? I'm talking this week from Sunday to now. And redoing a lot of stuff in CSS and checking some new things out. And my browser of choice to check all this stuff out and is, of course, Firefox, the new one. And, man, everything looks nice and crisp in Firefox. You know that? It's just fantastic.
Just looks right.
It looks good.
Are you using the web developer toolbar?
No.
You should check that out. It's got some really cool features on it. It allows you to resize the Firefox window from 640 to 800 by 1024 by 768 and customize the size. So you can actually see the way your page looks. It's specified.
It's just like buttons you flip back and forth?
You just press the button, boom, it switches.
Cool.
Validation on... just press a button and it'll show you the source. It's got some nifty features. And that's the problem with Mozilla. You start going over to MozDev and looking at the plugins there. It's like, you know, I'm sitting over there. I got the preference toolbar, the Google toolbar. I got the web developer toolbar. Now I added the MozEdit. Because, you know, instead of me having to sit there and pull crap out of here and then move it to another document, I just, you know, click on the MozEdit, got a little text editor that opens up in Mozilla, paste all the stuff I want in there, and I'm, you know, I can take notes right on my browsing session.
Cool.
And there's little buttons on there that I added that you can actually launch applications out of Mozilla. So, you know, say, well, I want to put it in something else, click the button, here comes ABI Word.
Awesome.
It gets addicting. Pretty soon, you don't have a browser anymore.
You've got a half a
toolbars.
Yeah, half a page of toolbars.
And you got like a little line of content, and you can go crazy with the toolbars and all the different plugins that you can get.
Must have more resolution.
Yes, I got a calendar. You know, you can sync the calendar with your Palm Pilot, supposedly.
I'm just a traditionalist, I guess. You know what I mean? When I edit web pages, I edit web pages in Vi. You know? Nothing special. I figure, you know, if you are going to do web pages, you ought to know how to do it, so why the hell do you have to have, you know, one of those gigantic HTML editors where you cut and paste different things in different places, and you really don't know how it works, so...
Qantas.
Why it is for me.
Quanta.
Yeah, Quanta.
Because then, you know what, if you end up using programs like that, you know what you end up with? You end up with some kind of front page junk. And now we've all seen that, right? Like, you've opened up the HTML that front page puts out.
And NBSP. And NBSP. NBSP.
That is not HTML. And NBSP. I don't care what anybody says, man. If you got, you know, you've got a web page, and the only thing the web page says is Hello World, right? And you do it in front page, it's like 44 lines long. If you do it in HTML, like even if you use Notepad on Windows and did it, it's like
six
three lines.
Lines,
you know? It's just crazy, that stuff. But I'm off my soapbox. Just use Vi and everything will be good.
No, I like Bluefish.
Bluefish is kind of cool, but it doesn't have... unless maybe like a new version does. The version that I was trying at work doesn't have a way for you to check your web pages, like internally and within Bluefish.
You
I mean,
can
it launches an external.
Oh yeah, well
it
launches your preferred browser,
right,
to check it. But then how do you check your web pages in Vi?
Use a browser.
Well, what are you complaining about then?
Yeah, but if I'm running Vi in a browser, then why would I want to, you know, instead of using Vi, why would I want to complicate things by using, you know, Bluefish?
I don't know.
Not that
Alan's,
you know,
using Quanta.
Bluefish is kind of cool because it does have some nice features on there that you can get into using, like it has color charts that you can pick from and stuff like that. That makes life a little.
Well, it's got CSS. Capability,
yes, it has,
too.
It has some CSS goodies in there.
Now, I don't find... I find Mozilla Composer all right.
Never tried it.
You never tried it?
Yeah,
I mean...
I've never used that.
It's pretty decent. It does... it's a GUI-based one.
Okay.
So, you know, you can build it and see what it looks like, and then click another button and go to the HTML. Or you can do it with a GUI... You know, the WYSIWYG with tag... indication, then just pure code, and then the last one is preview, which actually uses and it shows you what it actually looks like in the browser. And it does some pretty clean code, and I mean, for people who want a WYSIWYG development tool, you can't go wrong with Mozilla. You can't go wrong. Damn it.
Not with Mozilla. Mozilla's good stuff, man.
And when you say Mozilla, you got Mozilla, you got Firebird,
Firefox.
Thunderbird, Firefox, yeah.
Firefox.
Thunderbird.
Right.
Did they change the name of Thunderbird? No.
I don't think so.
Change it to Thunderballs. Galleon. Was it Entourage?
What was that cartoon back in like the 60s with the puppets? Was it Thunder? Thunderbird always reminds me of that. The
cartoon in the 60s with puppets, like the
you mean
animatronic type thing, or what, I forget what they were exactly recalled. It was one of the space science fiction type.
Wouldn't that be a puppet show and not a cartoon?
Yes, I guess it could be.
Are you talking about those shows like the Sydney Croft or whatever it was called?
We're getting totally off subject here.
What?
Not that we're getting totally off subject here, but it just popped into my head, so I had to, like...
So exactly how old were you in the 60s when you're watching these puppet shows?
I was, like, 5 or 6.
So, like, 15 or 20 or what?
Remember, I'm an oldie here.
You're going to change your picture on the tech show stuff. Just gray your hair out or something.
I'll have to look it up because I can't remember what the name of it was. But anyways, as you were saying.
What year did you graduate high school?
81.
No kidding. The Hawk 99.9, the oldie station, had a class reunion night tonight for celebrating the class of 1981.
All right, man.
There you go, Alan. The oldie station.
Dude.
Classic rock.
Classic
None
rock.
Of the hard stuff. The Hawk 99.9.
I've never listened to it. So
it's not a bad station.
I like listening.
Well, I have satellite in the car now, so I don't
that's right.
Radio at all.
You have a satellite in your car.
Yeah. Well, a satellite receiver, I should say, in the car.
So is it like a big catcher's mitt, and you just like drive around and wait for
drive around like, I caught Mir.
How about the crazy weather, huh?
Crazy weather.
Nice
yes.
and hot one day, snow in the next.
50 degrees one day, next day we get 3 inches of snow, and by this weekend it's supposed to be up to like 60-something, right? Woohoo! Bring it on.
I don't know. All this heat still hasn't melted the ice off the front sidewalk, has it?
you got some neighbors down there with some dangerous ice.
You got some what?
Some of your neighbors have some dangerous ice down there.
Look at the front of my house. The whole walkway up there is just a sheet of ice. I'm like, when did this happen? Monday it was like, you can cook an egg on it, and now it's an Arctic wasteland.
It's supposed to be like that in the wintertime, though.
Oh, yeah. H&R Puff and stuff. That's what I meant.
Yeah, that's not it, though.
Yeah, that's not it.
No.
Wait. Land of the Lost, that was part of Sydney and Croft, which wasn't H&R Puff and stuff. Yeah, it was H&R Puff and stuff.
Same people.
But they were... H&R Puff and stuff wasn't... There was, like, Land of the Lost.
You want me to bring the DVD over of H&R Puff and stuff? I bought it for my wife.
Oh, yeah. But that was not...
Puff and stuff. I remember that when I was a kid.
Like, they had that...
That was, like, you know, the children's show for children on LSD.
This is, like, before Barney, man. This is these big, huge... These dudes in these big, huge costumes with mouths that are, like, 4 feet.
You can't tell me Sid and Marty Crawford weren't, like, on LSD when they were doing that.
Oh, you know it.
Without a doubt.
But Land of the Lost... They ran Land of the Lost side by side with that show with Bob Denver. Remember that? In space?
Show?
Bob Denver.
He was
space.
A janitor and got stuck on like this satellite or something. And he was trying to get back to Earth, but he was like kind of, you know, lost in space, but it wasn't lost in space. And it was like they play Land of the Lost and then the time. You know, for a certain period of time, and then it play that show for a certain period of time.
Thunderbirds.
And then Bill Gates was at Linux World. No, but
okay.
You don't remember that?
Okay, everybody, for those of you who don't know, Dan is a multidimensional being.
You never saw
just
that.
Just recently stepped into this reality. No, I don't know what the hell you're talking about, Bob Denver in space, man. I have no idea.
You don't remember? Alan, you know what I'm talking about?
Thunderbirds was the name
what?
Was the name
Bob
of the show.
Denver's
what
Bob
was it?
On it? It was live-action puppetry, only they were like, you know, space people. You know, they were all, you know...
With Bob Denver?
No. This was, I'm still on the damn puppets, damn it. I can't get rid of the puppets in my head.
He's talking
new
about
blog entry, man. Here we go with
you're
Bob Denver in space and Bill Gates at the Linux Link show. Yeah, no problem. At the Linux World Expo. Oh, no.
Dude, now I want to know what the name of this show was. And I'll have that for you in just a minute. And then there was the Newsy Review.
Remember I remember that.
That. Yeah, no Gnus is good Gnus of Gary Gnu.
Yep. I do remember that. That's getting back into my my personal time frame again.
Now, wait, Bob Denver played Gilligan, right?
Yeah, there you go. You don't remember that?
I remember that.
Thunderbirds.
Okay, I remember. I know what he's talking about now.
The entire show is everybody's like walking around me.
I remember now. Okay.
Okay, so I'm not going completely insane, only semi-insane.
No, you're not going, buddy. You've been there already. Yeah, just like the rest of us. But anyway, and what do you think? You think we ought to close the show out here sometime soon? Because
just a minute. Because I know all these people want to...
Far out space nuts.
Yeah. Was that it? Far out space nuts?
That's what Moondog says. Just rambling at this point.
That was with Bob Denver.
Well, Google far out space nuts and see what goes on.
I'm trying to. Yeah.
Patrick doesn't like the Thunderbirds.
Yeah, it's Bob Denver, far out space nuts.
And never saw it, man.
You never saw it?
No. That one I can't say that. I may have seen that one, but I don't remember it, though.
Yeah, far out space nuts. Well, they, according to the site here, they said they only filmed 16 episodes. Remember...
I wonder why.
Remember Pix?
Pix.
On Channel 11, New York station.
Yeah.
They show cartoons after work, after school.
Yeah.
And they have those little contests where someone would call in, and it was like that generic Atari space game or something, and there was like a crosshair in the middle of the screen, and the UFOs would come across. And when the UFO got in the center, you were supposed to say Pix, and it would shoot the laser. So you sit there and you say, the people would say, Pix, Pix, Pix. And you had to get like a certain score to get a prize.
No, I don't remember that one.
You don't remember that? It was on like Channel 11.
My parents probably wouldn't have let me call up the TV station anyways. So.
Well, yeah. Yeah, you just say Pix. See? Moondog knows. Pix. Pix. There was another Pix. Game. There was the space game where you shot the spaceships. And I think there was one that you weren't supposed to shoot.
Dude, talk about interactive TV, you know?
And then there was another game, but I can't remember what that other game was. What was that other game? Moondog, what was that other game? Pix, Pix. You don't remember that? You don't remember that?
No, I'm sorry, I don't remember that one.
Remember Chiller Theater? Where the hand used to come out of the ground?
Chiller Theater was cool, fingers. Man. I would pay money to get a hold of some of the Chiller Theater stuff. I want the intro and the commercials.
Yeah.
Because I missed a dude that used to scare the crap out of me. You know, because my mom used to watch this. But I come from a long line of horror movie watching people. And my mom used to watch, like, Chiller Theater, and it'd be on, like, you know, 11, 11:30 at night when I was, like, you know, 8 years old. I'm in bed, and I'm listening, like, downstairs. I hear Chiller. You know? Scare the hell out of me. I love that stuff. I'm going to have to go look for a website to see if I can find that stuff now, just because that was so cool at the time.
Chiller. And Black Belt Theater. And Hachi Malachi and the Magic Garden.
Yep.
But Pix, man. Pix. Pix. Like, if you would have a hammer, if you take a hammer and Alan just starts moving his head back and forth,
mm-hmm.
and every time it gets at a certain spot and I say Pix and you hit Alan with the hammer, if he doesn't move his head, if I'm right, it smashes his skull open. Pix.
Pix. Pix.
Ah,
Pix.
Ah.
Giant robot.
I don't remember, but you know, probably at the time this was on, and my little sister was getting into MTV or something like that.
The space age robot.
Yeah. Was that with the three robots? No, that was Battle of the Space Giants.
Yeah, the Gigantor was just like Gigantor looked just like a big black tube, basically, on it, with the little kid that controlled him. He was like the radio controlled robot.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
Wait a minute.
The power is in your hands.
Oh, you know what? So that. Was that before or after?
Somewhere floating around, I actually have a couple of episodes of Gigantor on the computer.
Was that before or after Johnny Sacco's Flying Robot?
Because
I have the entire run of Johnny Sacco.
I'm not sure about
that.
You
ever watch that? Johnny Sacco's Flying? And I have the entire run of Ultra 11.
Never heard of
Ultraman.
Ultraman
11. Ultraman. The original one that used to... Well, not the original one for me growing up. I mean, there's been a ton of them. Have you ever seen the newer ones, like Ultraman Tiga or Towards the Future?
Never. Never. I missed out on that whole TV. Like, by the time I was really into my teen years, MTV just started. And I had two younger sisters, and they were fixated on this MTV scourge.
Uh-huh.
So, like, I missed out on
1981.
Yeah, yeah.
When they played music.
I missed out.
Back when MTV actually played music, yes.
I missed out on several years of TV watching because of this MTV thing. So, because my sisters were, like, glued to this. You know what I mean? You got one TV in the house, and your sisters are glued to the MTV. That's it. There's no movies. There's no more chiller. Nothing, you know?
Well, MTV was big, you know, like said, because it wasn't that many people who had it when it first came out and I first found out about it. It was like, you know, you always found out that one person whose development had cable,
right,
and had MTV. So it was, you know, we were always partying over at this one girl's house.
That was our house.
Her parents had, you know, cable, and it was like, oh, we got to watch this MTV stuff.
That was our house, man, and they were...
Yeah, we kept haters watching MTV.
They were glued to that stuff, man. MTV with Martha Quinn, was that her name?
Martha Quinn, the first DJ,
the early VJs. Yeah, I don't know. We're
way over time.
We're way over time. All right, everybody listening, I want to thank you very much for listening to our February 25th, 2004 episode of the Tech Show. Please forgive the little delay we had in starting the show up today, and I'm sure we've more than made up for it by now by just, you know, bantering along for the last 20 minutes and enjoying every second of it. Please do us a favor and tune in once again next week. Listen to us live if you can. If not, catch us on the Linux Link Tech Show archives. And by all means, if possible, join us on IRC every week. We're on Wednesday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern.
That's right.
This is Link.
We have to find out what time.
Yeah,
if
we don't have any technical difficulties.
If we don't have any if we do have technical difficulties, we're, you know, a few minutes later, that's all. It will happen eventually.
Yeah, and make judicious copies of all your open source software, Mozilla, Firebird, OpenOffice. Hand them out to all your friends. Get the technology out there.
Give it to everybody.
Thank you for listening.
Good night.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Pulling a flink Tech Show. Pulling a flink Tech Show. Pulling a flink Tech Show.